Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we do get started, I do want to encourage you, as you begin your Christmas shopping, remember store.greatdetectives.net. I have 5 paperback books out that will make great Christmas presents for fans of detective fiction with Slime Incorporated, and also my superhero comedy novels, Tales of the Dim Night, Fly Another Day, Powerhouse Hard Pressed, and Ultimate Midlife Crisis. And you can pick those up at store.greatdetectives.net. Well, now it's time for today's episode of Nick Carter, and I've got a very special announcement. I've reviewed the latest OTRR certified release, and we have 3 additional episodes of Nick Carter, 2 of which we're going to go ahead and go back in time a bit. The first time, way back more than a couple years, to June of 1946. The original air date on this one is June the 25th of 1946, and the title is The Case of the Missing Alarm Clock.
It's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability of solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Oh my God! Gotta get Mr. Taylor down here. I wonder how it's trying. I don't know, it was awesome. Sudden, too. Where is it? Come on, Mr. Taylor. There's got to be something.
What is it?
Let me speak to Mr. Taylor, quick.
Where is he?
He ain't here. Well, when's he coming in?
I wouldn't know.
Any minute? Say yes. Tell him the warehouse is on fire. Tell him to get hold of Mr. Emerson and get down here at once.
Did you say Mr. Emerson?
Yes, get the boat down here at once. The warehouse is burning up.
Dangerous to me, the way them walls are doing nothing.
It is dangerous. I told them so. Why, any minute, them what?
Yes? Hey, wait a minute. What's
that? Wall's caving in.
Snake! Watch out, Snake! The wall!
Come on, Winters. Don't just sit there moaning. We got to get them out of there.
It ain't no use. They're going ashore. I pull them.
But don't want to. You won't help me. I'll do it myself. They may be still alive.
Right, Granny. We're very much alive.
For the love of Pete, how did you get out of there?
It's all coming. Able to get out the other side.
It sounds easy the way Nick says it, but it wasn't easy then.
It wasn't very difficult. There's plenty of water.
Just look. Did you find anything while you were there?
I found this alarm clock. It seems to be specially wired so as to set off the fire at a given time.
An alarm clock?
Hey, that's what the Jersey firebug always uses in his fires. He's done it 8 times, that we know of.
Yes, I thought of it. Now, did you have any of the clocks that were found after those other fires?
We sure do, Dick. Got plenty of his fingerprints, too.
Now, we can catch the ones on this clock against the ones you got back.
And I also found this. It's partly burnt back.
Hey, looks like some kind of army issue, don't it?
That it really is. Had a name and a serial number on it, but I can't make out the name. However, the number is still clear, though.
Yeah?
We can check it and see where it leads us. Oh, watchman?
Yes?
Were you on duty here last night?
Sure. I'm the night watchman here. Stayed on this morning until Mr. Emmons and the owner gets here.
Did you see the fire start?
Yes. I was just coming back from the lunch wagon. They got me a cup of jam.
Alex, how did this happen here?
Well, Mr. Emerson, like I was telling these fellas, I was coming back from getting a cup of coffee, and suddenly I seen a big flare of greenish-blue light in the room just outside the office. And before I could turn around, the whole place was ablaze.
The office was in this corner, wasn't it?
That's right.
Now, who are these men, Alex?
I'm Sergeant Matheson, City Police. This is Nick Carter, investigator for the insurance company.
Well, I'm Walter Emerson, owner of the warehouse. You say you saw an explosion, Alex?
Kind of like that, but there wasn't so much noise like an explosion.
I don't understand. There was nothing in there to explode. Whatever exploded was planted there for that purpose, Mr. Emerson. This fire was no accident. It was set.
But why? There was nothing here but furniture. Who would want to destroy that?
A pyromaniac doesn't care what burns as long as something does. I understand that you were fully insured.
Oh, yes, completely.
Was the warehouse full, Mr. Lentz?
Very full indeed, Sergeant. The housing shortage has prevented many families from taking their furniture out, even though they want to.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, Alex, have you seen Mr. Taylor?
No, sir, I haven't.
Queer. He called me about an hour ago and said he'd meet me here. I wonder what's keeping him.
Mr. Emerson, I suppose you kept your safe here in the office?
Well, we have no safe, Mr. Carter. All business is transacted to the downtown office.
No safe here? Oh, that's very peculiar.
Yeah, what's peculiar about there being no safe here?
Matty, let's get out of headquarters. Nothing more to do here.
Right.
Come along, Walter. We've got work to do. I don't know that it has anything to do with it, Patsy. I just want you to find out who has a serial number I just gave you, his name and present address and where he works. If you can get it.
Okay, Nick, I'll get at it right away. When will you be back to the office?
As soon as I get through here at headquarters. Bye.
Hey, Nick, why were you so surprised that there was no safe in the warehouse office? Huh?
Matty, have you forgotten?
What?
One thing about the Jersey firebug was that before he set fire to a building, he always robbed the safe that was in it.
Uh-huh. I see what you mean. You think it might not have been the Jersey firebug that set this one, huh?
Well, I'm just putting that fact away in the back of my head. Now, how about checking the prints of this lock against the others?
I got the other prints right here, Nick. Let's see how they stack up. Where did I put those? Oh, here they are. Now then, where's the clock you found?
Here it is.
No.
Huh?
They're not the same.
Well, that don't prove the Jersey firebug didn't do it, Nick.
No, of course not. Matty, have you got one of the clocks you found at the other fires?
Well, there's one at the 48th Street station. They took it up there to make some tests on it. Want me to have it sent down, Nick?
Yeah. I'd like to have this clock checked against the other to see if the system of wiring is the same. But it isn't. We may find that this fire was set by someone trying to make us think the Jersey firebug did it.
Yeah, but look, Nick. None of the newspapers have ever carried anything about how that fellow set his fire. That part of it was always kept secret. So he wouldn't know that we had information about it.
Now, you better check the clock just the same. Walter, you stay here and wait for the other one to be sent down. Right. And you and Matty, check carefully to see if the way the clock is wired up is the same or different.
Right. Sure.
Come to the office. I'll be waiting for you. This information may be very valuable.
Hi,
Miss. How's business? Ah, business must be dull with you, no matter how it is,
Well, how do you mean, Miss?
Never saw you reading a mystery magazine before.
Oh, that. I picked it up in the drugstore this morning when I stopped in for my coffee. And life seemed a little bit dull around here this morning. I was just looking through it.
As long as you don't believe anything you read, it won't hurt you, I guess.
Did you find anything interesting at the fire, Miss?
I don't know. Might be the work of the Jersey firebug, since an alarm clock was used to set it off.
The Jersey firebug?
Yes. Why the surprise?
Well, there's an article in this magazine I'm reading on him and all the fires he set.
Yeah?
Oh, one of the series on pyromaniacs, apparently.
That's so. Does it explain that system you use?
Well, sure. You see? Diagrams and descriptions tells all about the clock.
Well, does it show how the clock was hooked up?
Oh, well, not in detail, no. It just says it was used to set off the fire. Right.
Well, does it mention the fact that he always robbed the safe first?
No. Did he?
Hmm. Well, someone should have read that article and tried to imitate the Jersey against him, without knowing about this too. Did you find out to whom the Army serial number belongs?
Oh, after considerable telephoning around and getting stunted from one person to another, I finally got what she wanted.
Yes.
He's Charles J. Huston, let out a couple of months ago on a medical discharge. Anxiety and neurosis, they told me. I checked the USPS, but they have no record of his having any job.
Found any address for him?
Well, the only address they had was the Sunset Trailer Camp out on Long Island. Yes. If he was discharged because of anxiety and neurosis, he must be the kind of man who would set fires and things.
Oh, Patsy, you ought to know better than that.
But, Nick, if...
Patsy, when they discharge a man from the Army because of a neurosis, it doesn't mean he's cracked up or crazy. An anxiety neurosis is like overwork, run down. Boy's undoubtedly perfectly sane. Too many people, just as you did now, think a man with a medical discharge is nuts and the chiefs have anything to do with him. All he really needs is a room and a chance to pull himself together again. He's just the same as you or I.
Oh, but Nick, it's true. You found that the fire seems to lead directly to him.
Well, even if you did it, Patsy, it has nothing to do with us having a medical discharge. No war angle to this whatsoever. And who's never been in the Army become fireproof.
Well, I'm sorry, Nick. I guess I just didn't think.
Yeah, just like a lot of other people. Well, I'm not trying to be tough to you about this, Patsy, but it's just that...
Nick, how are you, Patsy?
Well, hi, Waldo. From the look on your face, you must have some news.
Well, what'd you find, Waldo?
You were right, Nick. The clock we found at the warehouse is picked up altogether different from the one Matty had. Not the same at all.
No. Different wire, no space to crack, and an article in a magazine telling how to keep that. I'd say it all adds up to let the Jersey firebug out completely. In which case, we'd better be on our way to the Sunset Trailer Camp to have a talk with Charles J. Huston.
This is quite a camp, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah. Must be more or less permanent, too. The only thing, look.
Oh, poor Waldo.
What caused that remark?
Just thinking how sore Waldo was if you wouldn't bring him along.
Waldo is one of those things called a procrastinator. Give him a job to do, but because he's got routine running around, he tries to put it off as long as he possibly can.
This is the Huston trailer, this green one with the white trim. It matches the description the man gave to you. This is the right location.
Yeah. But if the door being open means Huston's around somewhere.
Well, we can look in, can't we? That won't hurt anything.
Yeah, that should be all right. But I hope it shows up soon.
Oh, there you are, Nick.
Oh,
Matt. Well, the right arm of the law. What happened to you? You're right behind us. The next time I looked around, you disappeared.
Oh, I got stopped at that last red light. Then I got boxed up behind a truck and couldn't get out.
Everything happens to me.
Is this Huston's place?
Yes, we were just going to have a look inside while we were waiting.
Just look here.
Hmm?
Look at that.
Yes. You made sort of a shrine of a war souvenir.
Hey, two very pistols, champagne, cartridge belt.
And two caps like the one Nick found after the fire, with the same identification on them.
Yeah. And there should be a third one. Empty spaces. I guess, right?
What's in them?
Magnesium flares.
Oh, what a beautiful blaze that makes.
Certainly looks as if Huston had something to do with it.
And the greenish blue sort of explosion the watchman saw could easily be a magnesium flare.
Yeah, it don't look so good for Mr. Huston. He's got some pretty fast explaining to do.
Must be around somewhere. He wouldn't have left the door open this way.
What the devil are you doing in my trail?
Charles Hanson?
Yes, so what?
Came up here to see you. We're out, so we just looked in.
How'd you get in?
The door was open, so we walked in.
Yeah, that's a likely story. I left the door locked. You must have broken in. That's what you did. What do you want?
Are you sure you locked the door when you left?
Sure, I'm sure. You calling me a liar?
Not at all. It was open when we got here.
Yeah? Well, look here. You forced it open. See? Here's the mark of the Jimmy.
What? I thought you're right. Why is Jimmy open? If we didn't do it, Haskell, believe me.
Why should I believe you? I can see what I see. The lock's busted and you're inside.
Now, look here, Haskell. Cops don't go around breaking in doors that way.
Cops? They're the worst of the whole bunch. A lot of...
Wait, no, all right, Haskell, wait a minute. When did you leave here?
Yesterday morning. What's it to you?
What have you been doing since then?
Why should I answer a lot of silly questions? I don't
have to. Haskell, you better take it easy. Now, we want some information. If you won't tell us here, I'll have to take you down to headquarters and make you answer.
What did I do? Kill somebody?
What have you been doing since yesterday morning?
Isn't it bad enough to have no home at this lousy trailer? No place to bring my wife where we can live together? No job, no nothing? But you have to come here and accuse me of heaven knows why.
We're not accusing you of anything yet. Tell me, Haskell, what happened to that sack of magnesium flares that's missing from your collection?
What do you mean, missing? It was here when I left.
Well, it's not there now. Any idea what happened to it?
No, I haven't. You probably took it. Hey, my alarm clock is gone, too. Well, that's good. You bust in my door, steal my stuff, then ask me a lot of silly questions. I'm not accountable to anybody anymore. I got my discharge. I'm a free man. As free as anybody can be with the world the way it is.
Look, Haskell, you're not making things any easier for yourself by doing this.
Hey, hi, Charlie.
What? Who's
that?
What job?
The trucking job you had.
What do you mean, trucking job? You're crazy.
I thought you didn't have any job.
You must know it was just a temporary job I took yesterday. Trucking some furniture.
Yep. Furniture, did you say?
Yes, furniture. For the Emerson warehouse. It was a rush job. They had a lot of stuff to get out in a hurry and needed drivers. Paid over scale, so I took it. I needed the money. And I still have no job.
Next, you hear that?
Hear what?
Look, Haskell, you go to work for Emerson. You're gone all night. The warehouse burns down by a fire. Set with magnesium flares like you've got there. And you
I had nothing to do with any fire.
No? Your army number is on the bag we found in the building when the fire was out. A bag just like them two you got in there now. Son, you and I are going down to headquarters. I want to know a lot more about this.
Hey, you can't take me.
No? Oh, yes, I can. I'm going to. Tell me, miss. No, not just yet, honey. I want to look around a bit. Okay, I'll be seeing you. Come on, Haskell. We're going for a ride, you and me.
Okay, you can't.
Come on,
everybody. Lovely. So mixed up, he got into a jam without realizing what he was doing.
I'm not satisfied he did. Don't forget, the lock on the door was broken open.
Well, couldn't he have done that as a blind?
Oh, yes, he could. I'm not going to look around for prints, though, in the door first. We can compare them with Haskell's prints. There'll be plenty of those inside.
And if they match?
That would prove Haskell was a liar.
And if they don't?
Well, that's something else. Wouldn't prove much one way or the other. Not until we get some more facts to go with them. And that's our job right now, Fessy. Getting all the facts we can.
So the prints didn't match. Well, couldn't that mean that somebody was working with Haskell on this?
It could. Well, give me and Haskell as innocent. Good afternoon. You the owner of this camp?
Yeah, sure am. But we're full up right now.
See?
Glad to hear.
And I just want some information.
Oh, sure. Glad to tell you what I can.
See? You know Charlie Haskell, don't you?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Nice young fella. He didn't have a chip on his shoulder all the time. Not a very sociable fellow, I should imagine.
Sure ain't.
Does he have any friends in the camp here?
Sure don't. I've seen him talk to the young couple living beside him, but that's all.
See? I suppose you know most of the people in this camp.
Oh, sure do. There ain't no chances just now. It's kind of the housing, Jordan.
All nice people?
Oh, sure, yeah.
All except the guy got the sale the other side of Haskell. Don't like him.
He don't live there. Just use it as a kind of office.
Office? What kind?
I don't know. But there's always a lot of queer-looking men running in out there every night. At least I could get rid of them, but there ain't found no good reason. See?
Well, what's the name of the man who lives there?
Terry Jones. William Jones.
That's not a funny name. I'll look my
head. Sounds like it, all right. Jones home now?
No, never there during the day, only at night. Okay, thanks for your trouble. So long?
So long, mister. Glad to help you.
We, calling Mr. Jones, Carolyn?
We are, Patsy, immediately. Before Mr. Jones gets back, I hope.
Isn't that the
chaperone
talking about his job?
Hmm? Oh, yes, it is. Say, may I speak to you a moment?
What's on your mind?
How well do you know Charlie Haskell?
Why, is he in trouble?
Maybe, maybe not. That's what I'm trying to find out. How well do you know him?
Oh, just a secret. You don't make friends easy, that I don't.
So I know you. What was that about a job?
Oh, why, yes. Well, this fellow offered me a job running a truck yesterday. He was restless, you know. Well, I was busy, and I knew Charlie needed money, so I told him about it.
Who offered you the job?
Oh, a fellow named Jones. Lives in that trailer right ahead of you there.
I see. Okay, thanks very much.
Oh, don't mention it. Say, I hope Charlie makes out all right.
Mm, that certainly ties up, doesn't it, miss?
And a curious Mr. Jones seems to have indicated with our next point of contact, dear Lee.
Oh. Looks as if Jones was out, miss.
Damn, Mr. Jones?
Not so easy this time. His door is locked.
Yes, yeah, he's just
going anywhere. Isn't there a daylight like this?
The owner said Jones was never around in the daytime.
Yeah, we can't wait.
Oh, that was easy.
I bet you did it. Stay outside the door. You see anybody looks as if they were coming, it's not swinging.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get out fast.
Right. Hey, listen. From here, you can look right into Haskins' cell and see his work over his training. Maybe Mr. Jones...
Maybe. Now, don't forget, if anyone comes, you sing. Brought to the warehouse and
distributed it from there. Mm. It stayed at the warehouse only for a short time, so we didn't need refrigeration. But recently, with so many patriotic butchers refusing to handle black market meat, the stuff piled up until the two rooms were full. Taylor didn't worry about the meat spoiling, but he did worry that government inspectors might trace some of the shipments back to him and find all the stuff that was stored there.
Oh.
So he decided to get rid of the evidence by burning down the building.
Which he did.
And he did that part very completely. But he never dreamed we'd be able to trace it back to him as we did. And finding right there in that trailer the jimmy he used to pry open Haskins' door with the green paint still on it, and finding the winding handle that belonged to the alarm clock we remodeled to use in starting the fire, puts the blame squarely on his shoulders.
And let Charlie Haskins out entirely.
Fortunately, yes. I wonder if this break in Haskins' favor will make him any more pleasantly disposed for the rest of the world.
It's tough when a young fellow like that is always on everything.
I'm going to try to pull him out of it. I asked Manager.
They told me you wanted to see me.
Come in, Haskins.
You don't think I'm a crook?
No, I don't think you're a crook. And I never did. But if you'd been a little more cooperative, with help.
Why should I be? Nobody ever cooperates with me.
You don't give them a chance.
Chance to what?
Just to be friendly.
They're all against me. I can't get a break anywhere.
No, look. Nobody's against you. That little tough luck, same as a lot of other men just out of the service have had. And you made a personal issue out of it. Just your own personal reaction to an unpleasant situation.
How do you figure that? I can't get a job. I can't get a place where my wife and I can live together. I can't get...
Hold on. What's the fact? See if we can't do something about this. You know any other men who don't have jobs?
Sure, plenty of them.
Know any other men who haven't found a place to live?
Yeah. But what's that got to do with...
Everything. Are all these other men you know convinced that the world is out to do them dirt?
Well, no. Not all of them, but I know a couple of them who...
Weston, you're one of a small minority of guys who take it out in writing. It doesn't help the situation at all.
Well, maybe, but I haven't
what do
had
you do?
A... I'm an auto mechanic. And a darn good one, too.
I'm sure you are. Suppose I find you a job. Will you take it?
Sure, I'll take it.
And if you and your wife will be satisfied with a furnished room until something better offers, I can fix you up for that, too. Interested?
Sure. Wait, if I could have Mary here with me, why, I'd feel a whole lot better. About everything, I guess.
Good. Here's $50. That'll help you to pay your wife's transportation and buy whatever things you need.
Look, Mr. Carter, I don't need your money. We'll make out somehow.
Now, look, this isn't charity. It's a loan. I expect you to pay me back when you can.
Thanks, Mr. Carter. You're swell.
That's Nick Carter all over. Always trying to help somebody when he can.
Why are you doing all this for me? A stranger.
Captain, we all owe you boys who are in the service more than we can ever repay. If anything I can do will help to pay that debt and get you started on the right road, I want to do it. I'm going to see that you get what's coming to you.
Oh, Nick, that's what you usually say to the crooks you catch. You're going to get what's coming to you.
Oh, yes, that's the ideal, but this time I'm talking to a friend. Right, Hudson?
Right, Mr. Carter. Oh, gotcha. Friend is a wonderful thing to have, isn't it?
How about letting us in on your story for next week?
Glad to do it, Phil. My story includes the list of the diamonds stolen from Mrs. Larkin's safe, the scent of a pointed shoe in the garden, the telephone number that refused to answer, and the place where diamonds are worth more than anywhere else in the world.
And there was excitement, too. When our plane dropped down through the fog trying to locate that ship at sea, I was sure my last hour had come.
Clues and excitement, eh? Sounds like a good combination. What's the name of the story, Nick?
I call it The Case of the Unwilling Criminal.
Nick Carter, Master Detective, which is produced and directed by Jock McGregor, is copyrighted by Stephen Smith Publications, Incorporated. Pictures
stories of Nick Carter appear in every issue of the Shadow Comics. In the broadcasts of Nick Carter, Master Detective, Ron Clark is starred as Nick, Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Matty is played by Ed Latimer, Waldo by Humphrey Davis. Original music is played by George Wright. Script is by Peggy Mayer and Jock McGregor. Any resemblance in these programs to actual persons living or dead, or to actual places, is purely coincidental. Nick Carter, Master Detective, is presented over most of these mutual stations every week at the same time. This is Bill Johnson saying so long until next week. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hi, this is Andrew from OTRWesterns.com. I wanted to invite you to come take a look at our site. We stream live OTR Westerns 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, along with putting out podcasts of old-time radio westerns. Check us out at OTRWesterns.com. You're listening to The Great Detectives of Old-Time Radio with Adam Graham. Now let's get back into the show.
Welcome back. Well, a very interesting episode, and dealt with a serious problem at the time. And that was the challenge faced by many return veterans who had discharged with some sort of a problem, particularly mental health issues. Could often be looked down upon. In many ways, this was a precursor to a lot of what we deal with and now define as post-traumatic stress disorder. An early attempt to understand this and to, you know, treat it with some respect and actual understanding, opposed to going off in some sort of unfair assumptions, which many people tended to do. This was not the only effort in entertainment to have some sort of understanding about this. Superman was in the newspapers as a Sunday feature as well as a daily feature, and several weeks of the Superman Sunday feature were dedicated to a soldier who had to return due to what they were termed as combat fatigue, and how Superman had to work with the man's family to get them to understand that it was not because he was cowardly or especially weak. So there was definitely these pushes to get some understanding and fairness for people who had served their country and suffered as a result of it. And of course, the problem of this being June 1946, less than a year after VJ Day, and housing and jobs were both problems in the post-war world, in a especially a cute way that this episode highlights. So I'm glad this episode was rediscovered. I wish it had been in better shape, but it's interesting from a historical perspective because it highlights so much of what was going on in that post-war era, and probably in a way that Nick Carter really didn't focus on the war, even when we have so many episodes that were actually from the mid-war era. All right, well, now we turn to listener comments and feedback. Now, we do turn to listener comments and feedback. And Natalie has a comment regarding the episode, The Case of the Homely Bride. She writes, "What an outdated view of women. Wow." That statement at the beginning, how she'd likely never marry in spite of her father's wealth, blew me away. Otherwise, it was a good episode. I will say, and certainly I guess it's a bit of a contrast because, you know, on one hand you have a show that have very forward-thinking message about veterans and people suffering in combat, but you'll find in a lot of, you know, a lot of the old-time radio that there is an attitude towards women who are considered to be less attractive in a lot of radio shows, certainly not just Nick Carter. There's a show I really like, Life with Luigi, which generally has a very sweet, natured take on the world. But one of the key plot points of the story is how Luigi wants to avoid marrying Pasquale's daughter, Rosa. And each episode, they just rip poor Rose's appearance. But that's just, that is one of those things that you do encounter. I've said a few times that when you listen to these shows, it's almost like being a guest in another time. And there are certainly positives and negatives to that. But thanks so much for the comment, Natalie. And that will actually do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And then next Thursday, another episode of Nick Carter. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.